Remember those dusty old paper files? You know, the ones our medical histories used to live in those.
The good old days.
Well, things have changed a lot since then.
They really have.
And today we're going deep on something called data solidarity.
It's a pretty fascinating concept.
Yeah, and it really makes you think about all the ways our health data is being used these days. Like, it's not just doctors looking at charts anymore. We're talking wearables, health apps, maybe even your fridge someday.
It really is a whole new world of data, and it has huge implications.
Absolutely. But it's not just about, like, personalized insights anymore, right? It's bigger than that.
It really is.
Data solidarity is about seeing all this data as something that can benefit everyone.
Right. The insights we can get from it could lead to breakthroughs that help tons of people, maybe even society as a whole. It's a pretty powerful idea.
Okay, I have to admit, solidarity usually makes me think of, like, protests and social movements, not data. So, how does this concept work in the digital world?
Well, it starts by recognizing that all this data we generate, it's not just a personal asset. It has a collective dimension, too.
Okay, so it's not just me and my data. It's more like us and our data.
Exactly. Data solidarity pushes for a more collaborative approach. And to actually put this into practice, data solidarity is built on three key pillars.
Three pillars. Okay, I'm intrigued. Let's break them down. What's the first one all about?
So the first pillar focuses on making it easier to use data when it has the potential for big public value, especially if the risks are low.
Hold on. Public value. What does that mean exactly when we're talking about data?
Good question. In this context, public value means that the data is being used in a way that benefits a lot of people, not just one individual, maybe even future generations.
Okay, so it's like, my data could help researchers develop a new treatment for a disease that impacts millions of people.
Exactly. That would be a clear example of public value.
Gotcha. So it's not just about tweaking my own fitness routine with my smartwatch.
Mm-hmm.
It's about my data potentially contributing to a healthier future for everyone.
That's the idea. And there's actually a really cool tool that's been developed by the University of Vienna to help us figure out this whole public value thing. It's called Pluto.
Pluto, like the Disney dog.
Haha, not quite, but it's just as interesting.
Okay, tell me more about this Pluto thing.
Well, it's basically an online tool that helps assess the potential public value of a certain way of using data. It asks questions about the benefits, the risks, the safeguards in place.
So it's not just a simple good data, bad data kind of thing?
No, it's much more nuanced than that. And what's really cool about Pluto is that it actually gives more weight to the benefits that data use might have for groups that are often marginalized.
Oh, wow, that's awesome. It's actually taking equity into consideration.
It is. It makes sure that the needs of people who are often overlooked are prioritized.
That's putting principles into action. I like that a lot. The first pillar is about making it easier to use data when it has a high chance of having a positive impact on a large scale. What about the second pillar?
So the second pillar, this one is all about preventing harm and offering support to anyone who might be negatively affected by how their data is being used. This is where things like data breaches come into play. And privacy concerns, too.
Right, because even with the best intentions, things can go wrong.
Absolutely. And the sources we're looking at, they actually suggest creating something called harm mitigation bodies.
Harm mitigation bodies. That sounds pretty intense. What are those?
Yeah. Imagine independent organizations that are specifically dedicated to looking at situations where someone claims that they've been harmed by how their data was used.
Okay.
And the important thing here is that this would even apply if no laws were broken.
Oh, interesting. So it goes beyond just the legal system.
Exactly. Because sometimes harm can occur even when all the rules were followed.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense. So these harm mitigation bodies, what would they actually do?
They would be responsible for monitoring patterns of harm, investigating specific complaints, and they could even provide financial support to those who've been affected.
Wow, that really adds another level of protection.
It does. It ensures that the responsibility for preventing and addressing harm goes beyond just following the law.
Okay, so we've got one pillar about using data for the greater good, another pillar focused on protecting people from potential harm. What about that third pillar?
Now, this is where things get especially interesting.
Lay it on me.
Okay. So the third pillar of data solidarity, this one tackles the economic side of data. It suggests a tax on corporate data use that doesn't really show much public value.
A data tax. Now I really want to hear more.
Think about it this way. We're constantly generating data, right?
Right.
And companies are using that data to make tons of money.
They are.
So, if companies are profiting from our data, shouldn't we get a share of those profits, especially if that data use isn't really benefiting society as a whole?
It really makes you think. We always hear about how valuable data is, but who's actually getting the rewards?
That's exactly the point. This third pillar aims to ensure a fairer distribution of the benefits that come from data use.
Okay, so if it's about recognizing that data has real economic value and making sure that value is shared more fairly. So we've got these three pillars: making it easier to use data for good, protecting people from harm, and making sure profits are shared fairly. It seems like all of these point towards a much bigger idea here. Like maybe rethinking how we view data ownership and governance altogether.
You're absolutely right. Data solidarity isn't just about you controlling your own data. It's about establishing collective ownership and oversight.
So instead of thinking my data, it's more about our data.
Exactly. It's recognizing that this data we're all generating has implications that go way beyond the individual.
I'm picturing things like data commons or those data cooperatives I've been hearing about. Are those the kinds of models we're talking about?
Absolutely. Those are great examples of how data solidarity could work in the real world.
It gives people more power and control over how their data is used, who benefits from it, and how those benefits are shared. Really interesting stuff.
It is.
But before we go too far down that road, I do want to address something that I know a lot of people are thinking right now: data security and privacy. I'm sure some folks are listening and thinking, wait a minute, I don't want all my sensitive health information just floating around out there.
That's totally understandable.
So how do we balance data solidarity with the need to protect sensitive information?
Well, data solidarity doesn't advocate for just throwing all our data out there without any protections. In fact, it emphasizes even stronger data security and privacy measures.
Oh, okay. So it's not an either-or situation. We can have both.
Absolutely. Data solidarity is about creating ethical and equitable data practices, and that goes hand in hand with strong privacy protection.
So it's about being responsible and respectful with data, not just sharing it willy-nilly.
Exactly. And it aligns with other important concepts like data justice, digital humanism, indigenous data sovereignty.
All these different pieces working together to make sure data is handled the right way.
Exactly. It acknowledges that while data has incredible potential for good, it also comes with risks that we need to address carefully.
That makes sense. But if data solidarity is all about this collective approach,
yeah,
where does that leave the individual? Like, what can our listeners do to promote these ideas in their own lives?
That's a great question, and it's where you, the listener, come in. Data solidarity can't happen without people being informed and actively involved, so informed participation is key here. Data solidarity isn't about blindly handing over your data. It's about understanding the complexities, demanding transparency, and pushing for systems that are fair and equitable for everyone.
It's pretty mind-blowing stuff when you think about it. It really highlights how data isn't just some abstract concept out there. It's deeply connected to our lives, our health, and the future of healthcare.
It really is. And this whole conversation about data solidarity is just getting started.
Okay, so data solidarity sounds great in theory, but I'm curious, what does it actually look like in practice? Are there real-world examples of these principles in action?
Yeah, absolutely. It's still a relatively new concept, but there are some pretty inspiring initiatives popping up that are embracing these principles, like in the field of rare diseases, for example.
Oh, yeah?
We're starting to see these patient-led research networks that are really taking ownership of data.
Oh, wow. So these are groups of patients who have the same condition coming together to, like, actually collect and analyze data themselves and drive the research.
Exactly. They're setting their own research priorities, making sure the data is being used in a way that directly benefits their community. And they're often partnering with researchers, but on their own terms.
Wow. That's a powerful example of what data solidarity can look like. It really shifts the power dynamic and gives those patients a much stronger voice. Are there other examples of this happening outside of rare diseases?
For sure. We're also seeing the emergence of data cooperatives, which take a slightly different approach.
Data cooperatives. Okay, tell me more about those.
Imagine a group of people pooling their data together and then using that collected data to negotiate with companies that want to use it.
Oh, so instead of each individual being approached separately, they have this collective bargaining power.
Exactly. It's about shifting the balance of power in the data economy, giving individuals more control over how their data is used and who profits from it. And we're seeing this in all sorts of areas, not just healthcare. There's this really interesting project in Europe where farmers are forming data cooperatives.
Farmers are sharing data. I'm curious, what's the point of that?
Well, by pooling their data, they can get a much better understanding of things like market trends or best practices.
Oh, so they can use that information to make better decisions for their farms.
Right, and that can help them optimize their operations and maybe even gain a competitive advantage.
So it's about economic empowerment through data. That's pretty cool.
It is, but it goes beyond just profits. They're also using this data to advocate for more sustainable farming practices.
Oh, that's interesting. So it's about using data to create positive change on a bigger scale, too.
Absolutely. Data solidarity can have impacts on multiple levels.
Okay. So it sounds like we're starting to see some really promising real-world applications of these concepts. But let's be real. There have to be some challenges, too, right? Like, what are some of the hurdles that data solidarity faces?
Yeah, for sure. One of the biggest challenges is addressing the digital divide. Not everyone has equal access to technology or the digital literacy skills needed to participate in this kind of data-driven world.
Right. And if data solidarity relies on people being informed and engaged, then that's a huge problem. We have to make sure everyone has the tools and the knowledge they need to participate. Otherwise, it could end up making inequality even worse.
Exactly. We also need to take a hard look at our legal and regulatory frameworks. A lot of our current data protection laws were designed with a more individualistic approach to data in mind.
They weren't really thinking about these collective models.
Right, and those laws need to evolve to support these new ways of thinking about data ownership and governance that data solidarity is promoting.
That sounds like a pretty big task.
It is, but there's growing recognition among policymakers and regulators that the current system isn't really working anymore. Data solidarity offers a really compelling alternative, and I think we're starting to see some momentum building.
It's good to hear. But it's not just about top-down change, right? It seems like this also requires a lot of bottom-up support from individuals, communities, and organizations.
Absolutely. It's about all of us speaking up, demanding more ethical and equitable data practices, and supporting initiatives that align with these principles.
The more people get on board, the faster we'll see real change happening. All right, so let's bring it back to the individual level for a minute. What can our listeners do? As, you know, budding digital health citizens, what are some concrete actions they can take to support data solidarity? You mentioned digital literacy before, but what else can people do?
Yeah, so becoming more data aware is a great starting point. Really pay attention to what data you're sharing online, who you're sharing it with, and what they're doing with it.
So, like, actually read those privacy policies, right? Even though they're super long and confusing.
Yeah, exactly. Don't just click accept without understanding what you're agreeing to. Ask questions. And don't be afraid to say no to data requests that you're not comfortable with. You have the right to control your own data.
So it's about being a conscious consumer of data, just like we're learning to be more conscious consumers with other products and services.
Exactly. And think about the companies you support, both with your money and with your data. Choose healthcare providers, tech companies, research institutions that prioritize ethical data practices. Look for ones that align with those data solidarity principles we talked about.
It's kind of like voting with our wallets, but also voting with our data. Mm-hmm. Supporting the companies that are doing things the right way. What else can people do?
Never underestimate the power of your voice. Talk to your friends and family about data solidarity. Raise awareness on social media and reach out to your elected officials. Tell them you want to see policies that promote ethical and equitable data use.
So, turning awareness into action, both in our personal choices and in how we engage with the wider system.
You got it. The more people demand better data practices, the more likely we are to see real, meaningful change. And that change has the potential to benefit everyone.
You know, it's really incredible to think about how much our relationship with data has changed, even just the last few years.
It really is.
Like, we're finally starting to realize that all this data we're creating, it's not just some random thing. It has real power.
Right.
And with that power comes a lot of responsibility.
Absolutely.
And this whole concept of data solidarity, it gives us a framework for thinking about how to handle all of this.
It does.
It's about, like, moving beyond just individual control over our own data.
Yeah.
Starting to think about how we can shape the future of data together.
So it benefits everybody.
Exactly. So as we wrap up our deep dive here, I'm curious what you think the future holds for data solidarity.
That's a great question.
What are some of the trends or developments you're watching in this space?
One of the most promising developments I'm seeing is the advancement of what are called privacy-enhancing technologies, or PETs for short.
Pets. Okay, interesting.
So these pets, they basically allow data to be analyzed and shared in ways that protect people's privacy.
Oh, that's really important, especially if we're talking about sensitive health data.
It is. It's crucial for building trust, right? And encouraging people to participate in these data initiatives.
Yeah, totally. So it's about finding ways to use data for good without putting people's privacy at risk.
Exactly. Like, imagine a research study that wants to analyze health data from thousands of people. Traditionally, they would have to collect all that data and store it in a central location, which obviously raises some privacy concerns.
Yeah, for sure.
But with some of these pets, the analysis can actually be done without ever having to move the data from where it's originally stored.
Oh, wow. So you can still get the insights you need without putting anyone's data at risk.
Right. It's pretty amazing stuff.
That sounds like it could be a real game changer for data solidarity.
It really could. And these are just a few examples of how things are evolving. I think as we move forward, we're going to see even more innovative solutions coming out that will address the challenges and help unlock the full potential of data solidarity.
This has been a really fascinating deep dive into a topic that I think a lot of people don't even realize is so important.
It is important.
But it's becoming more and more relevant to all of us. You know, as our lives become more data-driven. And this whole idea of data solidarity, it really challenges us to rethink our relationship with data.
Hmm.
To understand that it's not just about personal control, but collective power and responsibility.
Right.
It's about working together to make sure that data is used ethically and in a way that benefits everyone.
Exactly.
So to our listeners out there, we'll leave you with this thought. We're living in an age of datafication. Pretty much every aspect of our lives is being turned into data these days. Everything from what we eat to how we sleep to how we move through the world.
All of it.
And with that comes a responsibility for all of us to ask the tough questions, to demand better, and to work together to create a future where data is used for good.
Couldn't have said it better myself.
Thanks for joining us for this deep dive into data solidarity. Until next time, stay curious, stay informed, and stay engaged.